Right, it's time for Baldry's Beat. Keith Baldry, Legislative Bureau Chief for Global News. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning.
Okay, this one really came to a boil quickly here this morning in Ottawa on this China state interference story, because the Conservatives had forced a vote on this that was going to happen this afternoon, our time, on whether Katie Telford, Trudeau's chief of staff, should testify and what she knew about this China state interference. And it looked like the Liberals were going to lose that vote, because Jagmeet Singh, the NDP leader, said we're going to vote with the Conservatives.
Well, and the Liberals signaled yesterday they're considering making the vote a matter of confidence.
Yeah.
Which would potentially topple the government.
Bring the government down.
They backed away from that, I think they blinked. So Telford's now going to testify in front of this committee.
So she is now going to testify. So let's listen to, boy, the heat was really on the Trudeau government here on this. So let's listen to Conservative MP here, Michael Barrett. Here he is speaking in the House of Commons.
They appointed a family friend of the Prime Minister, a board member on the Beijing-funded Trudeau Foundation, to advise the Prime Minister on whether he maybe should, probably might, could have a public inquiry. Why won't these Liberals and their NDP coalition partners allow the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, Katie Telford, to testify?
Okay, well, now appears she will testify. So, like I said,
yeah, and we don't know what she's going to say. I mean, again, there's not a lot of detail surrounding this, but I think the Liberals blinked here.
Yeah.
And Telford is now going to take the stand. Back to David Johnston.
Yep.
Man of high integrity, but again, kind of politically tone deaf for Trudeau to basically appoint someone he regarded as his uncle,
as his family friend,
growing up, living next door to the family cottage. Again, it just gives the political opponents a feast to dine on.
Well, it's always one of those ones about public confidence in the process, right? Like, you could have the person with the most integrity in the world, you know, as honest as the day is long, to come in and do this.
Many,
but if the public is not fully confident in them, that's a problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure we know the answer to that question yet. However, there's lots of instances where governments under heat actually appoint someone of a different political stripe to look into the matter, rather than just hiring someone that shares your political view or that you have some sort of alliance with. Appoint not your enemy, but someone who's obviously on the other side of the fence. And many governments have done that in the past, which the Trudeau government has chosen to ignore.
Right. Also, other developments on this story this morning, Trudeau has announced that David Johnston, the special rapporteur, will be asked to report out by October with a report on his findings. And maybe there could be more after that.
Probably a little longer time period than many people may have thought. I think the expectation is there would have been an earlier reporting out, but it is what it is. But that's we're now talking the fall, kicking this can down the road a number of months here. Doesn't guarantee the story's going away.
Right. And I had a really interesting discussion this morning with former Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart on the alleged Chinese state interference in the Vancouver election that he lost last year. And I also spoke to Brad West, the POCO mayor. They both are calling for a public inquiry, and they both think that the parameters of this review should be expanded to include municipal meddling in politics here.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I mean, you do have this story from the Globe and Mail that there was some sort of interference in the municipal election. To Kennedy Stewart's credit, he's not hanging his loss on any allegations or any evidence of interference in the Chinese governments. He's basically saying he lost by more than 30,000 votes. He's purely interested in this from his perspective as a poli-sci professor now, rather than anything else. Now, again, public inquiries, let's go back to the money laundering public inquiry, which fell far short of what people were expecting. And that's the problem with public inquiries. Everybody thinks the public inquiry is going to solve everything. Yeah. And you and I have discussed before, we don't know how it's going to work when you start bringing in spies and security people. There is the power to compel people to testify, but they can run into roadblocks. If you suddenly look at national security, I'm not convinced you're going to a public inquiry, even under the Inquiries Act, is going to be able to compel someone who has clearance on the national security basis to testify in open court.
Okay, let's talk about the latest south of the border here on Donald Trump. Now, Trump had put out a statement that he expected to be arrested today. It doesn't look like that's happening today.
No, doesn't look like
CNN
it.
CNN was reporting it could happen next week.
Yeah, and interesting watching CNN today, watching other networks reporting that right now people who are demonstrating the anti-Trump views are more numerous than the pro-Trump demonstrators. Manhattan in the criminal court, there's more anti-Trump people there. correspondents reporting from Trump Tower, where there's supposed to be the big pro-Trump rally. There's more reporters present than there are Trump supporters. So right now, everything seems to have fizzled a bit. So, but again, it's not going away.
No, it's not. And the process continues here. And we saw the barricades being put up outside the courthouse in New York City yesterday. So something is certainly percolating here, but it doesn't look like
it's brewing, but yeah, we don't know which way it's going to go here.
Right. So this is interesting for the Republicans, because you got a lot of MAGA Republicans who are very still loyal to Trump. Let's listen to one of them here. This is Representative Andy Biggs, one of the biggest Trump supporters in Congress here. He's, of course, a Republican. And here he is comparing what's happening to Trump. And you'll hear him make a comparison here to Bill Clinton. Have a listen.
If you're Bill Clinton and you give $850,000 to Paula Jones in a civil settlement, which we all agree was a civil settlement, nothing happens to you. But if you're Donald Trump and you give money in a civil settlement, somehow a crazy theory emerges from a radical leftist DA supported by George Soros to say, well, we're going to have to go after Donald Trump.
Well, that's a bank shot for me, because
leap there.
Well, because what we're talking about with Trump here is using campaign finances here to pay off Stormy Daniels.
And then using it as a tax deduction. You know, there's a lot of fronts here that the Trump people are going to say what they're going to say. But the problem with the Republicans, this could rip the party apart. There is a loyal Trump base, but there's also the Ron DeSantis crowd and others in the Republican Party who want nothing to do with Trump. And this may be the flashpoint to finally tear asunder all the factions in that party who have been sort of glued together, but since January 6th have sort of become untethered. And I think this could be the flashpoint.
I guess the approach by DeSantis appears to be not going to support Trump on the Stormy Daniels payment, but continue to point a finger at this attorney general in New York State and say this is a political prosecution of Trump.
Well, I mean, DeSantis is increasingly having his eye on the primary season. Again, they don't elect the nominee on a nationwide basis. This is done state by state. And DeSantis is going to start focusing on the Republican members in state by state, starting with Iowa and New Hampshire. He's the latest polls have him in the lead in Iowa, and he doesn't want to lose that. If he can win the first primary in Iowa, one of the first, that can give him some momentum. And it's hard to see how Trump necessarily would fight against that.
Okay, Trump calling on his supporters to protest.
Hasn't happened so far.
Take their country back, as he put it. Now, what does that mean? Is this like a call to arms, like another January 6th uprising?
Yeah, I think
Is it? Let's listen to a Democratic member of Congress here. This is Jason Crow on this point. Have a listen.
And when Donald Trump calls on protests or calls for protests, that's not what he means. This is somebody that doesn't respect law enforcement, that doesn't respect rule of law, that doesn't respect peaceful protests in our system. He respects only raw power and what's in his own self-interest, and he's willing to call for violence to do so.
Well, you know, he's not specifically calling for violence, and we didn't see much of a turnout by pro-Trump supporters.
Which is why
I think
the air may have gone out of the balloon here.
Yeah.
It was there in January 6th, but I think that was a sober wake-up for a lot of people who were backing Trump up until then. I mean, there's a lot of people who are facing serious jail time who were engaged in those tactics on January 6th, and a lot of people don't want to repeat that.
Yeah, I still starting to wonder, like, I'll believe this when I see it, when they charge Trump, you know? I mean, there's been a lot of noise here.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly seems like it's going in that direction, but I'm still not convinced it's actually going to happen.
No, I think you're right to be a little skeptical here. I mean, the New York Times reported last week there were signals coming from the prosecutors, but not actually no attributable statement saying we are going to charge Trump.
Yeah.
The only definitive statement on that has come from Donald Trump.
Yes.
There's been nothing backing that up from justice officials.
Yeah, okay. Well, we continue
but
to follow
this. They did put the barricades out in front of the Manhattan Criminal Court.
They did.
So they must think
They're not going to perp walk Trump in there
and Stormy
handcuffs.
Stormy Daniels is on Twitter basically saying she thinks he's going to be charged as well. And she's been sort of ahead of the story for obvious reasons than a number of reporters.
But if they do arrest Trump, they'll have to bring him. He'll have to go from Florida to New York City, and then they got to bring him down to that courthouse. They're not going to walk him in the front door. Well, they're not going to perp walk Trump.
I don't think so.
No. I mean, they bring him in a back door. Or an underground or tunnel.
Well, again, into the speculation. We're into this unprecedented
this is what they're trying to figure out.
Okay.
Real quickly, the transit strike in the Fraser Valley. This is a lot of bus drivers on strike here, like 200 bus drivers.
Yeah, and it's it seems to be an intractable situation. But don't look for the government to intervene here. I mean, People forget there was a 146-day strike in Squamish and Whistler that went on. That's the longest transit strike ever. It was only resolved when Vince Reddy got involved, the super mediator. And I suspect Mr. Reddy's services will be called upon here, but it's early days in this. This is going to go on for some time, but don't look. And we talked to Labor Minister Harry Baines yesterday, again, making it clear government has no intention to intervene directly. The best deal is hammered out at the negotiating table. Having said that, as I reported last night, there's a number of tools at Harry Baines or the Labor Board's disposal to do get involved in this. They can appoint a mediator, a special mediator, a fact finder, an industry inquiry commission, or even require the employees to vote on the final offer or the latest offer.
But you don't see a back-to-work bill.
I mean, the House resumes next week, but I'd be very surprised if we're going to see legislation. That is not in the NDP's DNA. Having said that, but again, back in the 90s, which I think was a different NDP government than you see today, it was a little more scared of its shadow back in the 90s. They did bring the House back on a weekend to end a QP support strike, support workers strike in Surrey. I believe it was Surrey or New West. And also they ended a bus driver strike through legislation. But I don't see that happening here.
Let's go right to your phone calls. Benny in Abbotsford. Hi, Benny.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm calling regarding the bus strike out here in Abbotsford. I'm an avid bus user there, and I'm concerned about not having public transport. The union has stated that they're out indefinitely until they get a settlement. No one can be without a paycheck even for 2 weeks. The labor minister needs to get Vince Reddy in here and try to resolve this strike. Why do we have to wait 4 to 6 weeks or 3 months before Vince Reddy is appointed? We know that the Squamish Whistler strike was resolved with Vince Reddy. So let's bring Vince Reddy in, and so I can get out and buy my groceries.
Okay,
Benny. Great to hear from you again, Benny. Yeah, well, as Vince Reddy will tell you, you need to put pressure on both sides before he can be effective. There has to be some, everyone has to have some skin in the game here. So Reddy got involved at the very end of that 146-day strike. He didn't get involved in the beginning. So I'm afraid there's going to probably be a little pain felt here by both sides before you're going to see a mediator have any effectiveness.
Could there be more pressure on government, though, to deal with this strike, which would appear to be of larger scale compared to the other earlier
ones? It is a larger scale, but I think this is not going to be resolved in the short term in terms of government intervention. It would have to go on, I think, for a little bit before you'd see the government move, and I'd still be very surprised to see the government step in here. Harry Baines has made it very clear, and he comes from a labor background, former IWA official. Very familiar with how labor negotiations work. Imposed settlements and back-to-work legislation is the last option for government.
Right, and that's a good point about Vince Reddy, because I've talked to him before, and he will make the point that, look, don't bring me in prematurely here.
Exactly.
You've got to try and get this thing hammered out as much as possible.
You got to. Both sides have to feel a little pain. I mean, before he can get their attention at the bargaining table.
Right. Brent in Victoria. Hi, Brent. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Keith. Good morning, Mike. So I take BC Transit quite a bit. I grew up in Langley. I take it out to Chilliwack a lot. I mean, I live in Victoria now, but I was planning on doing a little bit of a, touring around. And now hearing about the strike, those are my only means of transportation. I don't drive, so I take transit. So it's like taking a bicycle away from a child, right? You know, in a sense, a lot of commuters, they also. They also commute from the Fraser Valley back and forth and to the businesses, and that's going to affect businesses big time if people can't get to and from doctor's appointments, you name it. People need that transportation, and it's a basic means of transportation. I feel sorry for the people who are disabled also, right? A $52 a year bus pass, right? They're going to be really, really hurt in this whole transition.
My understanding, Handy Dart is still operating.
Okay.
Again, I don't think the government's going to get involved early. If there is government involvement, it's going to have to come sometime down the road after both sides feel the impact. And for the employer, it's loss of revenue. For the workers, it's a loss of a paycheck. And as each day goes by, both sides feel more and more pain. And that's when someone like Vince Reddy can come in and ease that pain.
Okay. This is impacting a lot of people, though. I take your point, the caller said. Like, this is 13,000 people on a weekday use this system. So this is a lot of people impacted by this, and they appear to be far apart. This union's looking for, is this right, 32% pay hike? What? To bring them in line with other drivers in Metro Vancouver's transit system, and they have been without a contract for a long time. So this appears to be a union that's dug in here.
It does, and but again, dug in when you're getting paid is different than getting dug in when you're not getting paid. And I've been through labor disputes. I've negotiated labor disputes, and there's a world of difference when you're without a paycheck, and especially, I'm not sure they're getting strike pay or not. We'll look into that.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.